Hello, and welcome to the weekly podcast of the German chapter of the International Coaching Federation, ICF. My name is Felix Müller, and I have the great pleasure to welcome today Becky Hall. Hi, Becky. Great to have you here.
Hello, Felix. It's really, really good to be here.
Wonderful. You are an experienced executive coach, leadership consultant, and facilitator. You are registered by the European Mentoring and Coaching Council, EMCC, which is next to ICF, a wonderful, great coaching organization, mm-hmm. and have been working over 20 years one-to-one with senior leaders and with executive teams across all sectors.
That's right.
Yeah. And you're based in the UK in?
In Oxford, yeah.
But I love it, town of Oxford, wonderful. Mm. Most recently in 2021, you published your book, The Art of Enough, 7 Ways to Build a Balanced Life in a Flourishing World, yeah. which deals, from my point of view, with the core question, if always striving for more should or could be replaced by accepting enough as the core approach to our lives.
Yes.
And when I first heard about the title of this book, I thought, what an interesting idea, because also for us coaches, because obviously the audience of this podcast is predominantly coaches, since I think we often work with clients who come to us who are stressed out because of this more.
Yeah.
They always have to grow, always have to deliver more, have more and all these things. And so the idea I find compelling. The only question obviously, what does it mean if you coach for enough?
Yeah.
And that's what I would like to kind of discuss with you in this podcast, yeah. to see what do we as coaches actually do if we say, okay, this is a great approach. Mm. What does it mean in the way we change our coaching? What does it mean for coaches, for coaches, for our clients? So lots of questions.
Yes.
But I think a good starting point probably is if you could just explain what prompted you to write this book.
Yeah, great questions. Thanks, Felix. And really, this book comes from my observation of what so many of my clients were experiencing over the years. So I began to notice patterns. And the patterns start with being enough. So a lot of people that I coach, and I'm sure some of your listeners will be familiar with these stories, a lot of the people I coach are extremely successful on paper, you know, in great jobs, doing amazing things, and yet have what's sometimes called imposter syndrome or confidence issues. They don't feel like they are enough, or that they feel like they're going to be discovered somehow, or that they've got a very critical inner voice. So the idea of being enough is a pattern that I see in my coaching. And then there's the flip side, which is the idea of doing enough. Mm-hmm. Many of my clients, again, I'm sure this won't be a new story to many of your listeners, are facing exhaustion. They're burning out, or that there's a risk of burning out. They are pushing themselves, or that the demands on them are somehow greater than their capacity to deliver. So I think we're in a time in history where, in organizational life anyway, where burning out is somehow on the rise. Lots and lots and lots of people, lots of our clients are really struggling or navigating the how can I do enough, not too much. So there's the being enough, there's the doing enough. And then, of course, in the context that we're leading in at the moment is globally climate change. So it's as though the whole planet has to think, how can we have enough? How can we reclaim our relationship with the idea of healthy limits? So I think it's a global issue. And I think much more sort of closer to home in terms of the leaders and managers we may be coaching. It's also a very personal issue, which is how can I live a healthy life within healthy limits? How can I reclaim the idea of doing enough rather than doing too much? And that when I began to sort of really explore these ideas, I thought, actually, there's a theme here, that this idea of enough is one that perhaps we need to renegotiate our relationship with. So somehow fall back in love with the idea of enough, mm-hmm. as a sort of springboard for us to achieve amazing things. So yeah, that's the sort of overview of the concept. And from a coaching perspective, of course, there are plenty of things that we can do in each of those spaces.
So because you just mentioned that it's kind of falling in love again with enough. So this always sounds like we've been in love with enough and we kind of lost it.
Well, that's a great, I did say that, didn't I? And I think that we are at a time in organizational life where it seems to be more fashionable for people to strive to work hard, and that limits are unfashionable, really. You know, you have to be amazing or awesome, you have to push, and of course there's a need, of course, that each of our clients and all of us want to grow and develop and change, and but this idea of excess, which we're really pushed towards, is something, well, maybe it's always been there, maybe we haven't been in love with enough, but I kind of feel like the digital age, our digital age, has created over the last 25 years a real challenge for people in relation to their boundaries, about when they stop work, when's it okay to look at your phone, when's it okay to feel that you have to answer all your emails. We sort of individually now have to navigate when work begins and ends, and that makes it perhaps a little bit more complex or hard to stop working than it was beforehand. I certainly grew up you know, writing all my essays and things by pen and ink and with no mobile phones. So I do have a glimpse of knowing what it was like organizationally before we were also available.
Which opens up an interesting question for me, because obviously the title, 7 Ways to Build a Balanced Life and a Flourishing World. So obviously we have the micro of the balanced life, my personal life you mentioned, and the flourishing world is obviously the macro view of everything. And how the two work together. And I think what you just mentioned is that the world has always developed. I mean, I think that's part of human existence. But as you mentioned, it's in the past years just leapfrogging ahead and has major changes. And now, what would from also in between somewhere, there's this organizational approach that you also mentioned. Kind of, obviously, I'm part of an organization. How do you think it's which part is more dominant in defining what enough is, or to say if we are able to fall in love again with enough?
Well, it's a lovely question, and I think it'll be different for everybody. So I created a model for my book where there are 7 ways, and I start it from the inside, and it goes, it's an inside out model. But I also had this idea that although the first 3 chapters, so in a sense, my thinking is you start with yourself. How am I in my relationship with enough? Do I feel like I am enough? What's my story around that? And then, because it's often a sense of not being enough that drives us to overcompensate and work really hard so that we feel that we have to drive ourselves to prove ourselves. But of course, it's different for everybody. So my idea is that by creating a sort of 7-step series of interventions or focus areas, they're not linear in one way. They'll be different for everybody. So, for example, to your question specifically, there will be some people listening or who will think, oh yeah, I've got a client who's really, really working on managing overwhelm or avoiding burnout or even recovering from burnout. So for some people, it's the doing enough bit. But so you might start there. But then, of course, as we know with coaches, that there's often an internal story to be told. So it could be that, as I just suggested, that for some people, burning out is because they're trying to prove something to somebody else. So it's all very systemic. And I'm a systemic coach. So I think there are nested systems there. There's who we are and how we feel about ourselves. Then how we are in the organizations we are in and our environment. And then we're all, of course, citizens of the world. So, so for some people that I coach, it's very much about that their starting off point would be, okay, I suffer from imposter syndrome, or I really need to build my sense of confidence about my leadership stance, or perhaps something like that.
I was just wondering if we take the imposter syndrome as an example, and what I heard you say also is that enough is also I think the examples you've been sharing with us, and also the imposter syndrome example, is not a new example. I mean, you have been coaching on people with burnout, and so I think we all have been coaching with them before. But from your experience, how has it, for instance, also changed for you to kind of frame this future state using the term enough? Because I think that's and you're probably the best to kind of comment on that, saying, okay, previously obviously you have not been using enough probably, so you used a different terminology to discuss with your clients, and now you kind of have enough as a word. And I just wondered what changes in the way you coach if you introduce such a I mean, at the end of it, a concept.
I think it has given me a frame and a languaging around the concept of fullness as being a starting point. So enough, in the model I've created, there are sort of, the question is, what's enough balancing between? I see it as a set of scales, and enough is balancing between a scarcity and excess. So, and we're all sort of constantly recalibrating this idea of, am I enough? So this a position of scarcity, which is really rife. I mean, that's a cultural thing in our organizations and our lives, you know, that we have to, that we come from a place of lack. And I'm saying that actually for us as individuals, it's really, really healthy to work out what fills us up, what gives us a sense of resource, what best makes us able to be in a state of enough. And I use the word state really aligning, talking about nervous system alignment and being able to be present and being able to regulate our physiology and as well as everything else. So it's this idea of fullness. And then the second idea that using the terminology of enough that's really allowed me to focus on in coaching is the idea of healthy limits or healthy boundaries, which, again, you know, I'm not the first coach at all to be dealing with this. I'm sure we all work on this stuff. It just gives me a central metaphor to hang it around, gives me a sense of it gives an articulation to an issue that I think so many of us are working with people about.
Well, what comes to my mind is the one thing is kind of the word of homeostasis, I think, in English.
So that, yes.
Yeah,
yes.
And kind of the we as human beings are part of nature, and nature obviously is also designed around growth and assuring the survival of species. Nature, on the other hand, obviously it has to live with scarcity and excess, yes, in a way, in periods. And so, yes. So does it mean that your idea with the enough also brings us back to kind of like the way humans are meant to be, in a kind of philosophical way?
Yeah, maybe that's a lovely philosophical way of thinking about it. And, you know, it's the idea of balance or equilibrium is a very systemic idea, isn't it? And, you know, I'm a student of the systemic constellations work of Bert Hellinger, a German philosopher and coach and amazing person. And his idea was that all of this stuff is in service of the flow, the onward flow of life and love. So, and in organizations, that's the onward flow of organizational health, if you like. So we're always, as coaches, in service of those two things. And I think that enough is a way of, is a sort of starting point so that you can understand really the cyclical nature of the world, that we, in order to do things, we need to be well resourced, we need to be well rested, we need to do all the sort of physical stuff, but also we need to be well resourced in terms of our skills and our capabilities and our state and all of that stuff. And when we are faced with things, that challenges that we're either not resourced to do or that they are just too big for us, we have to recalibrate and work out what is our contribution that we can healthily make, so that we're not where there's an equal exchange of cost and gain, and we're able to give what we can give and what's ours to give without giving too much.
Mm-hmm.
So it's all those sorts of ideas come into play with this, because of course what I'm not saying, and this is where it can get a little bit semantic, I guess, what I'm not saying is that we want to settle for mediocrity or that we want to stop striving or stop, but I would say we maybe want to stop striving and start thriving. But we, of course, we want to grow and deepen our knowledge and learn and all of that stuff. But I would offer that as a sort of model for growth, as opposed to always wanting more, always wanting better, this sort of constant, impatient, almost addictive sense that we have to do more, 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 better, 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 because it's that isn't sustainable individually or worldwise.
Mm-hmm. Although obviously we know that we think it's sustainable. I think individually we also mentioned burnout, so
yeah.
People yeah. walk until they don't walk anymore. So I'm wondering if you now to go back to the coaching practice now. If I take some person who is at risk of burning out, or actually yeah. really getting sick. I mean, moving kind of.
Yeah.
To the other side, I think they're diagnosed with burnout.
Yeah.
My experience is that these people are usually a bit, I think, also neurologically limited in their resources, and often not too willing to go into this kind of discussion, because I think it's what I hear is very fundamental. How do I approach things? I think it's much easier to say if my boss comes to me and says that's something more you could do, to say yes. Instead of saying, "Well, is this the right thing to do at this very moment?" Now, how do you approach that in your coaching?
Depends what stage people are at, because I think that, and look, you know, I'm not immune to this. I have had periods of overwork myself. I mean, so I get it. I'm not sitting in any sort of judgment, but I think there is an addiction at play when people are closing, and I use that word deliberately as a sort of, gosh, that's a strong word to use in context of work. But I think that work and workaholism is one of the few addictions that is actually applauded in many of our organizations. It's sort of seen as a badge of honor. So it can be really hard to resist, really hard. And I'm not suggesting that I've got a magic wand answer, but I think noticing, when we begin to think about it as an addiction, you can start to notice the habits and the patterns that sit behind it, and who and the sort of relationship with what the cost is for what you're gaining and giving too much and all of that. So I think the first thing that somebody who's in that position needs to do is to stop and look.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I as I'm saying it, I appreciate how much of a challenge that is, but the first thing that and the trouble is, for lots of people, they stop when it's too late. They stop when they're ill, and then it's about recovery. So if you are able to spot a pattern that you notice in yourself, or if your client is able to notice a pattern that they notice in themselves, then they can start to really pause and reflect and consider choices that they could make. And that's very much the coaching pattern, isn't it? Notice, reflect, choose, reset. And some of this stuff, of course, is not in their control. So, you know, if for many people that I work with, you know, they can't say suddenly just say no to their line managers or their bosses or their shareholders or whoever it is. So it's about getting really creative about drawing those boundaries and looking at, in some cases, really big life changes, but in most cases, it's about finding daily practices or small micro amendments so that you can begin to focus on what would resource you to meet the challenges you have. And so I tend to start small. So it would be like going for a walk in between online meetings, or making sure that you take time away from your screen to have lunch. You know, those small micro patternings. Plus, of course, lots and lots of the other things that I'm sure you and your listeners will know. You know, I'm a big fan of sort of mindfulness or some meditative practice or exercise or time in nature. You know, there are lots of things that will resource each of us, and making sure that we're trying to invite people to allow time for contact with their resource each day.
Okay, so what I'm hearing is all those little steps, but also the inviting people to feel themselves again in a way.
Yeah,
so, absolutely. So do it and take basically the feeling aspect as your the kind of as a KPI for enough.
Lovely. Yeah, I think so. But I'll certainly notice it. I mean, I really believe that that one of the sort of paradoxes really of being in a state when you're feeling so overstretched is that we forget that we have choices. So I always start with, what are your choices? Really, what are your choices? And as soon as you ask that question, you begin to unpack all sorts of assumptions. Because sometimes there really are no choices, but you know, there are often the assumption that we can't say no, for example. In some cases you can't say no, but in other cases you really can. So is that an assumption, and how can you what's within your gift and what's not?
Very interesting thoughts. Yeah, so really making people conscious of what they are and what they can do, and kind of move them out of autopilot.
One of my favorite Jung quotes is, until you make the unconscious conscious, it will control your life and you'll call it fate. It's really that. It's like all coaching, it's about bringing things into conscious awareness. The difficult things as well, bringing everything into conscious awareness so that we can make choices about it, or see where there might be either big adjustments or micro adjustments that could make a difference between living a life which feels that like it's coming from a state of scarcity, or that living a life that just feels too much and overwhelming. And it's that, getting back to this idea of enough, that when we know that we are enough, we are much more likely to be able to make set healthy boundaries and say, well, no, I am able to do that and I'm not able to do this. And you can actually then, I argue, make an even bigger contribution because you are well resourced and in a good state and able to give the best of yourself, not not the sort of state wherein when we get to a state of near burnout, the irony is that we're so depleted of our resources that we're not able to give what's required of us, however hard we try.
Now, what the thought which just comes to my mind is that obviously when I look at people in their careers, often obviously you start as a specialist in a certain domain, and then you grow in that domain, and then there comes this transition phase where often people become leaders. And we're also now in the context of enough, obviously I think those are the enough changes. And there's this kind of balancing act between what am I doing and what going back to your resource element, say, okay, where am I most resourceful with what I'm doing? How do you so the enough as a concept can become quite on one hand dynamic but also quite complex, can't it?
Yeah, well, there are lots of jumping off points for enough, aren't there? So I mean, I guess that, you know, that movement from sort of technical expert to leader, I always describe it as being, you know, the move from really knowing what you're doing to moving into sort of behavioral psychology and how you work with people. So your focus is, it's like you go up a linear pole, and then you become very horizontal. It's like you've got the whole table, so you've got a big you've got much bigger scope, and it's much more about people and setting the tone and creating all the things that leaders do, but creating the tone, creating the culture, setting the vision, etc., etc. So in that context, it's kind of a different ask, isn't it? So people who are really, really, really good at what they know how to do, and they're suddenly moving into something that feels much more nebulous, much more difficult to navigate. And also the thing that happens when leaders become leaders is that they are much more watched, and they what they do and say and what they role model is really important. And that brings me back to a really core concept of enough, which is enough permission. I talk about enough permission, which it's like, what do you feel you have permission to be or do?
Okay.
And in some respects, our leaders are the people who give us that permission subliminally by what they do. So if you've got a boss who emails you on a Sunday, you kind of feel like you have to email them back on a Sunday, or you may feel like that. So, yeah.
But moves from permission to also sometimes obligation.
Yeah, sometimes it is.
If he sends me something on Sunday, I better, or also kind of like Friday evening, I better respond over the weekend and wait until Monday, because it seems to be, yeah.
Exactly. And so, of course, if you're coaching somebody, if I'm coaching somebody who has got a boss like that, then the conversation might be around how they can have a conversation with their line manager about boundaries, etc. If I'm coaching somebody who is sending those emails, it's a conversation about, what are you role modeling? What do you want to be role modeling? What tone do you want to set? How can you lead a healthy organization? How can you lead an organization where enough is at the heart, where you don't have executives burning out all around you, and you're not setting a culture where you're expecting people to give more than they can, not be well resourced.
Now, you just mentioned the position of somebody one will be coaching. And I just wonder, do you see any differences in how people perceive enough or what they're striving for by generations?
It's a really good question. It's a really good question. I think, yes, I do. I think that, so people of my generation, I'm in my 50s, people in my generation and perhaps older, really are come from a time when it was kind of expected that you worked really, really hard for really, really long hours, and if no pain, no gain, all of that kind of stuff. I don't agree with that necessarily, but I kind of think it's much more prevalent.
Mm-hmm.
I think millennials, I mean, I'm going to get shot down here because I hate generalizing about generations, but there is some good research actually about millennials, of course, isn't there? Are really driven. There's a real drive for purpose, yes, but also success. That I think the burnout that is driven by millennials is also quite economically driven, because of course the possibility that things are really expensive, certainly in the UK, you know, the economics is make plays a factor. And then Gen Zers, you know, as they're called, are I coach several millennials who will say, oh, the people coming up, they just don't want to put in the effort. They care too much about well-being. They care too much about, you know, they're so boundaried and careful about their well-being, and they're much more fragile in terms of, or you could say either much more fragile, or I also hear much braver and more open about talking about mental health. So, you know, those are caricatures, I know. And I'm not saying I agree with any of them, with all of them, but I think it is interesting that there is a shift happening around what's most important. So, you know, for people of our my generation, the idea of vulnerability at work, or well-being, or thriving, or sort of saying, no, actually, I'm not going to do this really big report by Friday because I actually need to take a break. It's almost sort of, that's not within our cultural reference point, whereas for perhaps someone in one of the younger generations, it is. And I think that's healthy. I think it's a good conversation for us to have. But until the young people are leading the organizations, we won't really know what the impact it'll have on organizations.
I think the interesting point is that at least you have in an organization, if you have all these three generations or variations of it or whatever, but at least you have them. You know, I think it's probably always difficult to discuss about a concept or so if there are no examples.
Yes.
In your relevant culture. No, I think so if you don't want to grow grapes or olives in Tuscany, it's kind of hard. But I think and probably one way would be, I don't know how you see that, to encourage conversations between those generations in the organization, which are kind of like over lunch or things like that, just to figure out how can you see things differently without agreeing or disagreeing, basically just listening and seeing and just knowing, okay, expanding your horizon, and then at the end try to make sense out of that.
I love that. I mean, one of the last chapter of my book is Enough Connection, and one of my suggestions really is to sit down and talk to someone you don't agree with, because we all know, as you've just described, in organizational terms, that's so healthy. It's so useful for people of different views and divergent views, especially, to get together and say, how can we use the best of our thinking? How can we really hear each other, listen to each other, and find a way that accommodates all? So within organizational life, of course, that's really useful. And in many of our cultures, societies, life, it seems like it's getting a bit more polarized, that people have to take strong oppositional positions. And we know as coaches, especially those of us who work with sort of communication and having honest, good, productive conversations where we disagree well, that that you have to be able to accommodate difference, different views, and that's what often creates the best of us.
Now, coming back to the coaches, especially coaching and coaches, what do you think is, obviously, I assume you know lots of coaches.
Yes.
And as you're older, is there any type or personality, whatever, of coach whom you feel more poised to coach for enough?
I think that any coach working in the space of well-being, leadership resilience, leadership vulnerability, any coach is working with anyone who is overworking or burnt out, or recovering from burnout, or anywhere along the track of working with that boundary. And as I said at the beginning, anyone who's working with people who are building their confidence or their gravitas or their state. I also think I don't particularly do this, but there are plenty of coaches I know of who do. That there's a sort of growing movement or an interest in climate conscious coaching. And there's a little bit in my book, which would be, there are two chapters in my book, which would be appropriate for that, because that's where I look at the sort of whole, the bigger system. And if you're working with leaders who are exploring how to be climate conscious or how they can make a difference, then there might be something in it for them too. But primarily the first two, I think.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And one other question I have, obviously the book is called The Art of Enough,
mm-hmm.
not The Science of Enough.
Yes.
Or the something else.
Yes.
Of Enough.
Yes.
Why is it an art?
It's a great question. Because it's individual for each of us. So because it's something that each of us has to balance and consider all the time, and it takes conscious effort and recalibration. And what my enough is will be different from what your enough is, and each of our clients and coaches. So in that sense, it's quite a personal journey, but it's also creative. So what are the how can I live my best life? I mean, that, I think that's the question at the heart of all of this, is how can I live my best life as a coach? How can I support my clients or walk alongside my clients as they explore how they can live their best life,
mm-hmm.
in the roles that they're in? It felt more appropriate for me to call it an art than a science, because it's not linear, it's not sequential, and it's not the same for everybody. It's much more personalized, creative, and drawing on the best of our resources, which will really vary for everybody.
Thank you. So to summarize what I heard, and thank you very much for sharing all of this with our listeners, is I think that the enough is not what it could seem, or what it sounded for me in the first moment. It's kind of a limiting or a point. It's more a moving thing,
mm-hmm.
that has multiple facets contributing to it, and it's really a stopping point to just really move out of autopilot, reflect what you're doing, what your resource situation is, and all of that, measure, and then say what's the best thing to do now.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not meant to limit me in growing.
Mm-hmm.
It's just probably to also look at trade-offs to say, okay, what in this very moment, what's the best thing for me to do, including growing.
Mm, sure.
In a conscious way, instead of this autopilot metaphor.
Definitely. I would say that it's a sort of springboard, or it's a state, really.
Mm-hmm.
Being in a state of enough is a starting point for growth, I think, because it's healthy growth.
Mm-hmm.
And I also think it is about limits, but it's about healthy limits. I sometimes talk about containers. So it's more like the metaphor I use is of a plant pot.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a plant pot keeps the plant well contained and nourished so that it can grow to be the beautiful plant it is. So when we think of limits as healthy and things that can contain us and enable us to be the best we can be, then those are the sorts of limits I'm talking about in terms of enough. That enough facilitates us to be the best of ourselves.
Thank you, Becky. It sounds like almost a closing remark, but before to give space for the real closing remark, I was like, is there anything, the kind of the one takeaway or the one thing you would like to our listeners to remember for the rest of their lives from the exciting work you have been doing and are doing in the art of enough?
Yeah, well, I don't know if it would be life-changing, but I hope that that your listeners have heard that in order to that to be enough can be a starting point for flourishing, and that when we reclaim our relationship with the idea of healthy limits and really focus on what resources us to meet the challenges of our lives, then we are onto something really, really good. And so enough is a jumping off point for being able to really thrive. And that for all of us, it'll be a different thing. So yeah, rethink your relationship with enough, or just think, what is my relationship with enough? And see where that takes you.
Thank you very much. It's a very exciting, interesting question, which I will happily take away. And I think that, because it was, as I mentioned, it affects all of us. It's not something for the chosen few. It's for all of us, especially also as coaches. And I think, I hope that as coaches, we are well versed enough in reflecting, and so that it's easy for us and we know more about us, ourselves. Nevertheless, we also, as you mentioned before, fall victim to the same patterns, and therefore, are not immune. So I think it's a great, great, famous last word. Well, Becky, I thank you very much. It was a great conversation. Thank you as well for our listeners. And if anybody wants to, obviously, learn more about book, learn more about Becky, go to, I think, presence.uk.net. That's the website.
That's right. That's my website,
find the contact details. And I assume that you're more than happy to kind of converse with whoever would like to know more about
Absolutely.
What you're doing.
Yes, please. You can find my contact details on my website, or I'm on LinkedIn, Becky Hall. So it would be great to be in touch with people. Please do.
Oh, thank you, Becky. Then I wish you a good remainder of the day. And thank you very much for sharing your experiences and thoughts with us.
You're very welcome. Thank you for inviting me. It's been a pleasure.